Jacobo, who sighed over the extreme ignorance and barbarity of the Indians, dismissed such stories as ludicrous. Nonetheless, archaeological investigation has generally borne them out. The Inca seem indeed to have migrated to Xosco from somewhere else, perhaps Lake Titicaca, around 1200 AD. The colonial account of Inca history closest to indigenous sources is by Juan de Betanzos, a common Spaniard who rose to marry an Inca princess and become the most prominent translator for the colonial government. Based on interviews with his in-laws, Betanzos estimated that when the Inca showed up in the Xosco region, more than 200 small groups were already there. Xosco itself, where they settled, was a hamlet of about 30 small, humble straw houses. Archaeological evidence suggests that the Inca gradually became more powerful. The apparent turning point in their fortunes occurred when they somehow made enemies of another group, the Chanca, who eventually attacked them. This unremarkable provincial squabble had enormous consequences. According to a widely quoted chronology by the 16th century cleric Miguel Cabello Balboa, the Chanca offensive took place in 1438. The Inca leader at that time was Viracocha Inca. A valiant prince, according to Cobo, Viracocha Inca had a warlike nature even as a young man, and vowed that after taking the throne, he would conquer half the world. Perhaps so, but he fled the Chanca attack with three of his four sons, including his designated successor, Inca Urcon. A younger son, Inca Cusi Yupanqui, refused to run. Instead, he fought the Chanca with such bravery that, according to the legend, the very stones rose up to join the fray. Inca Yupanqui won the battle, capturing many Chanca leaders. Later, he skinned them in celebration. Pizarro saw the trophies on display. But first, Inca Yupanqui presented the captives to his father so that Viracocha Inca could perform the victory ritual of wiping his feet on their bodies. Fearing that Inca Yupanqui was becoming too big for his britches, Viracocha Inca chose that moment to remind his younger son of his subordinate status. The foot-wiping honor, he proclaimed, actually belonged to the next Inca, Inca Urcon. To this, Betanzos wrote, Inca Yupanqui answered that he was begging his father to tread on the prisoners, that he had not won the victory so that such women as Inca Urcon and the rest of his brothers could step on them. A heated argument led to a standoff. In a Shakespearean move, Viracocha Inca decided to settle the issue by murdering his inconvenient younger son. It was a crazy impulse, one of Viracocha Inca's generals later explained. Inca Yupanqui was tipped off, and the scheme failed. The humiliated Viracocha Inca went into exile, while Inca Yupanqui returned in triumph to Xosco, renamed himself Pachacuti, World Shaker, and proclaimed that the ruling Inca families were descended from the sun. Then he went about conquering everything in sight. Hey, wait a minute, the listener may be saying. This family story makes such terrific melodrama that it seems reasonable to wonder whether it actually happened. After all, every known written account of the Inca was set down after the conquest, at least a century after Pachacuti's rise. And these differ from each other, sometimes dramatically, reflecting the author's biases and ignorance, and their informants' manipulation of history to cast a flattering light on their family lines. For these reasons, some scholars dismiss the chronicles entirely. Others note that both the Inca and the Spaniards had long traditions of record-keeping. By and large, the chroniclers seem to have been conscious of their roles as witnesses and tried to live up to them. Their versions of events broadly agree with each other. As a result, most scholars judiciously use the colonial accounts, as I try to do here.